From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of July, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll check out some of the news for the day and hear from Mike Tenner at T-Storm Weather, tstorm.net online, about the weather forecast, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, celebrating 100 years of agricultural programming on air from East Central Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, September corn today at 575 and three quarters, down 16 and a half. December down 16 and a half at 573 and a half. November beans 30 and three quarters lower at $13, a penny and a half on this Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago at the CME Group today. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely, Todd. Glad to be here.
All right. So let's preface what happened in Chicago, and maybe it's not for the reason I'm thinking about, but with what conditions are like on the farm there in Shelby County, Illinois.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, conditions are good. I mean, really, really good. We actually, you know, as you know, everybody got a little bit of a late start this year, but we probably got started before a lot of folks did there around the 20th, 21st of April. Had a really nice spring, and then we've had anywhere from 5 to 7 inches of rain in the month of July. And so, you know, you're in Illinois, if you've got a full stand and you don't have any replant with no ponds and you get 5 to 7 inches in July, then obviously things are looking pretty good. And so I don't want to, you know, count any chickens just yet, but we're standing in a really good situation right now.
So I made note and I answered this question to somebody on Twitter earlier today about why the marketplace might not be paying attention to a really droughty area that runs from, oh, let's call it Hereford, Texas, or the irrigated sections of that, through far western Kansas, parts of Colorado, western Nebraska. And I simply said, well, it's irrigated first, and the rain fed, and his question was, does it not matter? And it was the rain fed crop there, I thought, didn't matter very much to the marketplace. And I've been doing this for a long time, and we don't really ever talk about that far west to begin with. So I suppose that's number one to think about. So is that truly the case? And then is the rest of the crop just looking that good now across the bulk of the Corn Belt?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, Todd, it's a feast or famine type situation. That's all there is to it. So, you know, you get into parts of Kansas, Nebraska, and Texas, even parts of Missouri where you've got dry land corn, and it's an absolute disaster for some folks. And so they're talking like this is 2012 all over again. And, you know, guys like you, Todd, and guys like me might be thinking this is more like 2018. So you've got a 2018 mentality versus a 2012. Obviously, if you've got the 2018 mentality in the I states, 2012, you know, in what you would call some of your outliers, then obviously you got to assume that maybe your good areas are going to overtake the poor areas. Now, I think you got to be a little cautious here because Nebraska obviously produces a heck of a lot of corn. I mean, always top five at the absolute least, but usually top three. And I would say that the situation, in my opinion, needs to be closely watched, because the area of the Corn Belt that's having the biggest issues is an area of extremely high use. And so the basis levels, which are already extremely, extremely strong, you know, could be even more impressive this year. Now, that doesn't mean the cash price is going to be higher. I had a producer in Liberal, Kansas, in the last 10 days that received $10 a bushel for some corn. That's an incredible, you know, situation. I've never heard of such a thing, but I know that he had it happen because he actually sent me a copy of it because I didn't believe him. But, you know, I don't know that you'll get $10 corn this next year, but I do think that you'll have the opportunity to see basis levels even hotter than what we saw in this year.
Yeah, in that area, feedlots and ethanol plants, both domestically working to consume the corn. So that's an area that really has high consumption. In Illinois, Iowa, Ohio, where you have the Mississippi River Valley feeding from the Illinois, Ohio, and Missouri rivers, it's really a lot about the export market. So consumption is, some of the consumption is overseas for that crop. Now let's talk about what did happen in Chicago today. Was it just about potential rainfall and a crop that's getting better?
No, it's not all it is. You know, we've had some issues kind of getting these energy markets to, I guess, be stable. Times today were $2, $3, $4 lower on crude oil. No question that that provides some really stiff headwinds for our commodities. There's an overall recessionary type fear, a deflationary, call it what you want. Obviously, CPI numbers last week at 9.1% don't suggest there's any sort of an issue with inflation going away. But I think that there's a lot of fear about not only recession, you've got issues in China with COVID lockdowns. And then, of course, you've got some mutual fund, or some of the funds, in my opinion, are extremely wary of stepping in and buying these commodities because they've had their lunch handed to them at times. Yeah, they've made a lot of money at times over the last 12 to 24 months, but at the same time, over the last 6 months, it's not been near as much fun. So I think some of this money has moved to the sidelines. You're in more of a downtrending market. I know that's not what people want to hear, but quite frankly, you look at the charts and that's exactly what we're dealing with.
In an interview that's coming up just after our discussion here, Gary Schnitke and I talk about the price of fertilizer. He's written about it on the Farm Doc Daily website this week. He made a comment during that interview that surprised me, that suggested if you were going to buy nitrogen for fall application because it was so very high priced that you might need to take advantage of some sales for the 2023 corn crop. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. You know, Todd, earlier this, about 3 weeks ago, we decided to enter a trade with some of our producers that, you know, wanted to take the advice, I guess, but we were buying $6 puts and selling $7 calls for a nickel at the time. You look and see what those are at right now. And a lot of folks told us, you're crazy because we don't know what fertilizer is going to be. And I guess the way we felt about it is, you know, this year's free insurance price at $5.90. If you're locked in at a highest price, you know, if the highest you can get $7, I don't think you're going to be upset about it. So we were doing those in the March short dated. So those expire towards the end of February. Getting to your question, Gary Schnitke, obviously, he's way smarter than I am. And I can tell you that he's dead on whenever he's talking about this. Here's the problem. If you want to go ahead and lock in a bunch of corn like we did, and you don't do anything on fertilizer, it can bite you. But the way we're looking at it is a hedge of risk, a good old fashioned hedge of risk. The other side that can bite you even harder is if you're buying your anhydrous and you're locking it in at whatever rate you're going to get, 1,000, 1,200, 1,300, depending on who you talk to. It's obviously at varying prices. If you do that, and you're making the assumption that corn's going to be the same or higher, but then corn catapults lower, that could be a really nasty situation. So you brought up last week in Commodity Week, and I talked a little bit about it. In 2008, we dropped almost $5 a bushel from pollination time frame to the time these corn went off the board. And we all know good and well that if we dropped $4 or $5 this year on 22 corn, 23 is going to take it on the chin as well. So I highly recommend if you're buying fertilizer that you lock in some of the output side of the equation as well, because that ratio can really make life hard on you if you don't do both.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, to discuss an article he's written for the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It's entitled Nitrogen Fertilizer Outlook for 2023 Decisions. I'd ask you why you did this, but it's pretty clear why that's the case. With the high price of nitrogen, the Ukraine-Russia issues that have caused that, what did you look at in particular as it's related to Illinois and Midwestern crops?
Yeah, you can sum this up pretty quickly. Actually, we're Right now, anhydrous ammonia prices are at between $1,400 and $1,500 per ton. You probably should be expecting anhydrous ammonia prices in that range come August, September for 2023 production or booking 2023 production, maybe a little bit lower. But nevertheless, we're looking at very high nitrogen fertilizer prices compared to last year. We were at this point last year looking at anhydrous ammonia in the $750 to $800 per ton range. And we won't have that opportunity this year to have prices or nitrogen purchased at those low prices, if you want to call those low prices, which many people didn't last year. But look low now.
You put a historical chart up that shows the price of anhydrous ammonia, DAP, and potash. We'll talk about anhydrous ammonia. You can discuss DAP and potash if you'd like. But it shows since 2017, and this goes all the way back to 2018, but from 2017 forward, I'm going to guess the average was like $500 for anhydrous, and now we're at $1,400 or thereabouts, and the prices you just quoted for the fall. This all came about since the war started?
No, it actually happened before the war started. If we look at that $750 for last fall, which was up already, by January, we were looking at an anhydrous ammonia price in the high $1,400. So most of our increase happened before the actual outbreak of the Ukraine-Russia conflict.
So does that tell you that the futures prices were working and they were predicting that there was going to be a problem in Ukraine, Russia, and with availability of fertilizers, whether that because of just plain old supply chain issues or the war, or that the price of grain was high enough that it moved up in concert with it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Here's my gut feel. We would have seen anhydrous ammonia prices above $1,000 without any sort of event just because corn prices went up. If we look at where corn prices are now and sort of use history as to project where we would see anhydrous ammonia prices, they're at sort of $1,000 to $1,200 range. But we had a number of events that caused that to go above it. One was some problems in the New Orleans area with plant closures because of Hurricane Ida. And Ukraine-Russia conflict has always been a backdrop. And contributing to that is the fact that Western Europe has had a much higher natural gas price than the U.S. has. And that's been going on for a while. That's partly due to their dependence on Russia for their natural gas, but that has made nitrogen production in Europe much more costly than the U.S., and that contributes to our higher prices here.
So you've done some price prediction. We've talked about the reason prices are higher. Producers do have an option as to when they purchase anhydrous ammonia. Do you have thoughts on timing?
Yeah, so if we're going to purchase in the August, September, or early period, we're going to do it when the price is high. I would also be pricing some corn at that point in time. So if you're going to price it at that point in time, price some corn, because we do see a pretty high correlation between corn price and anhydrous ammonia price. So if we're going to look at lower prices for anhydrous ammonia in the spring, we're also going to be looking at lower prices for corn, so let's lock some of that in. I also think splitting sales is a good idea because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, and, you know, it's splitting sales and it is a good risk management. Finally, if you're pushing more nitrogen into the post-plant period or post-planting period, I might suggest taking the PACE endorsement for crop insurance, which will provide funds if we're unable to apply nitrogen post-plant. So I think purchasing nitrogen when we first have it, or first have bids available, is a okay idea, but also price some of those corn.
All right. So let me recap some of this. So if you're going to apply and you buy for this fall, make sales to probably cover the bulk of the price of that, cash sales for corn, that is, or some kind of sale for corn. You do like the idea of splitting the application, spring and fall both. But if you do the spring, you want to use the new crop insurance product called PACE. I don't remember what that stands for, but it covers your inability to put the anhydrous or nitrogen or urea or whatever it is in place, should that happen because of a weather or other issues.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The acronym stands for, in this world of acronyms, post-application coverage endorsement. So that's what it is.
Well, that's easy enough. And is it very expensive? I seem to recall it's horrible.
No, it's sort of in the $2 to $3 per acre range. So it does provide some protection for the case in which you, very low probability case that you can't apply nitrogen post-plant. But, you know, this whole nitrogen issue is, we're going to see high prices this fall. And we likely will have the ability to lock in prices at a high level for corn this fall. So you might want to think about doing that
On that note, thank you much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenura. He is at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online if you'd like to visit his website. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Todd. Great being here. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about the weather forecast going forward. There has been concern on and off about really dry weather across the Corn Belt, but the rains continue to dribble through. What does the next week look like?
Well, initially, it's going to stay very warm and hot. That will continue through Saturday, and then a large cool front will move through Sunday and Monday. Next week is going to be much more tolerable than this week, with high temperatures mostly in the 80s and lows in the 60s. So corn and soybeans are going to like that weather better than this weather. We will see some storms here and there over the next few days. Now, we're not looking for widespread and heavy rainfall, but as that cool front approaches and eventually passes, it will produce some showers and storms here and there. The best chances for rain through Saturday are generally along and north of Interstate 80. So everyone to the south of Interstate 80, while having a chance for some rain and storms, they don't have a great chance like we do further to the north. The best overall probability for some decent totals will be in southeast Minnesota, northeast Iowa, northern Illinois, Wisconsin, and then stretching into parts of Indiana. Now, Todd, that only takes us through Saturday or maybe Sunday. Once we get into next week, that's where rains look a little bit better than they have. We'll essentially become divided by coolness to the north and heat to the south across the Corn Belt. So that will leave most of the growing region pretty close to normal throughout next week. That setup is conducive to waves of energy moving directly overhead. And because of that, we are forecasting showers and thunderstorms here and there, not only next week, but maybe even into next weekend. Now, the exact setup this far out is always difficult to determine, but it's fairly probable for more than one round of showers and storms to affect varying areas at certain points throughout next week. In the end, we're thinking most people will see near normal totals over the next 7 to 10 days, with a swath or two of above normal totals, including some key parts of Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana. So the forecast certainly looks much better than it has, at least over the next 7 to 10 days.
What's your assessment of the growing season thus far, and what conditions have been like on the ground for the corn and soybean crop in Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, Iowa, and then the rest of the Corn Belt?
Well, June was unusually dry. It was the ninth driest June across the Corn Belt of the last 128 years. And so we knew that if we had a dry July on top of that, we would be setting ourselves up for quite a situation. Now, even if we receive about 1.5 inches of rain over the next 10 days, we'll still end up being pretty close to number 25 driest over the course of June and July. So this is not going to go down as a wet growing season, even with some of those rains coming up next week. But the thing is, you know, about corn in particular, is that timely rains are what it really needs. And it has received some timely rains. Dry weather in June is not as problematic as dry weather in July, because corn is much more reproductive in July. And once it even gets a little bit beyond reproduction, it still likes rain. It still likes cooler weather. So especially in the eastern states you were talking about, Indiana and Ohio, they were really dry as of a few weeks ago, but they got dumped on pretty good over the last 1 to 2 weeks. And so that's taken a little bit of pressure off of that story. It's also rained fairly nicely in parts of Iowa and Illinois. And if this forecast comes to fruition for next week, July is not going to look unusual once we look back on our records years from now. And typically when you don't see an unusual July, you don't have an unusual corn crop. The only exception to that would be is if August turned out to be very dry and very hot, or if for some reason the dry weather we had in June was unusual enough to affect the crop. But the thing about this growing season is that the crops were planted pretty late, so the impact of June weather was a little bit lower than normal, with the impact of July and August weather to be a little bit higher than in some of the other years of the past. So all in all, we're kind of in this middle game, Tom. We've had some flashes of problems. We've gotten out of them from time to time. We're seeing a little bit of a problem now where we need some more rain, but rain's in the forecast. So, you know, this is the way a lot of growing seasons work out, where you're kind of bouncing up and down to get to the finish line. And right now we still need some things to work in our favor, but at least temporarily they do look better.
I know further than 10 days out is tough, but what does August look like, at least to begin with, in your opinion?
Well, it does look warmer, and the only reason we say that is because the cooler weather that we have next week is going to retreat, and that would happen most likely in August, and so we turn a little bit warmer to start out the month. But at this point in time, there's just not a lot of reason to think we're suddenly going to turn dry or hot next month. If you think about the La Nina setup that we've had throughout this year, historically, it always produced corn yields that were pretty close to trend and soybean yields that were pretty close to trend and even above trend. And that's certainly coming to work out this far in the growing season, with us never having received a prolonged dry spell, and we haven't received a prolonged heat wave either. Yes, it's been hot at times, but this cool off next week is going to help to alleviate some of that pressure. And most of the time, what you have happen in July repeats in August. It's not a super high correlation, but it's one of the better correlations that we have for weather in the Corn Belt. And with July having been pretty close to normal from a rainfall and temperature standpoint, that's the best forecast going forward into August.
Thank you very much.
Yep, great being here.
That's Mike Tenere. He is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.